This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
All right, 11 o'clock hour. Thanks for hanging out with us. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. We are about 15 minutes away from the trash of the day. Let's talk some baseball before we get back into the NFL draft. As we heard from Brett Veach in the first hour of the show, the Royals, of course, get swept yesterday to wrap up the series in the Bronx against the Yankees. Once again, similar story, right? Close game, pitching gives you a chance, offense not enough.
Thought MJ got that one
late. Yeah, the last would end up being the last opportunity at the plate. Great play in right field, but it's been the same story there. They continue the road trip, 4-game series, an even bigger series now against the Detroit Tigers to wrap up this long 10-game road trip, where the Royals currently have one win on the road. That one win came on Sunday against the Cleveland Guardians. And it is April 17th, and so I'm not going to act like the season is over with this series result. But sure, this series feels massive now. You and I said a 5-5 road trip or a 4-6 will take. The only way they're going 4-6 on the road is taking 3 of 4 this weekend, starting tonight, against the Detroit Tigers. This feels like a massive series for a lot of fans, too. I'm not saying, like, hey, if they go and take one over the weekend, I'm not saying that the season is over. But, man, the path starts to get really tricky even this early with what they have ahead of them and the math that you have to figure out and how dominant they would probably have to be against the White Sox again and against some lesser teams, which they will play the Rockies coming up in a week or so. But at bare minimum, doesn't it feel like they have to split this weekend against Detroit now?
I guess I want to preface it with the thing you said, which is, no, I do not think that the season is just over. Even if they lost all 4, I wouldn't tell you the season is over. Now, I would tell you it's in trouble. Trouble. Like, the early stages is like the thing we talk about all the time. Do not find no way to bury yourself early on to the point that you can't make it up. Because, look, some teams can overcome that. The Astros in previous years, even last year, have found a way to do it. But knowing where you typically stand amongst the standings, do you want to be completely out of it? No, you don't. You've now lost 3 in a row, your longest losing streak of the season. It's Lorenzen on the mound. But as it sits right now, you're still only a game and a half back of teams like the Guardians or the Angels or anyone else who might be in like those final playoff spots. Nothing has inherently changed as far as you're not way behind the eight ball. The Detroit Tigers have also lost 2 games in a row. So by splitting, you essentially keep yourself in the same spot. Couple games back of them, couple games back of a playoff spot. And you can feel better about yourself going into it. Bit concerning that the Detroit Tigers do have, and I will tell you right now, their strength is very similar to the Royals. The Tigers can pitch, and pitch pretty well. They have Skubal and Jobe and a couple of other guys in Detroit.
It's a 4-game series. You're seeing both.
you're seeing the meat of the Detroit. You can't avoid any of it, really, of the Detroit Tigers rotation. You didn't accidentally get lucky and Skubal would have gone game 5 had there been a 5-game series. So for an offense that at the moment can't find it, it's concerning to me that you would go in there. I just 2-2. Like, I know that this is a stabilizing thing and overall we'll still come out of this thing and be like, that wasn't a good enough road trip. And then it's going to make me call for the sweep of the Colorado Rockies.
But that's the position
which
that
is asking too much, but yeah.
You know, that's the position you're putting yourself in. If you're not going to perform well against the higher quality teams, and they faced them, right? It's been a tough start to the schedule. Then you are setting yourself up where you're going to need to dominate the White Sox again, that you're going to need to dominate teams like the Rockies if you think you're not going to be able to get wins against these better teams. But what I still think, as much as everybody, and look, we've done it too, has focused on Melendez and Renfro. You know what the bigger problem is right now? Jonathan India and Salvador Perez and Vinny Pasquantino and Michael Massey, these dudes aren't hitting. That's the bigger problem. This season, the success that they were going to have was never going to be about Hunter Renfro and MJ Melendez carrying the offense. And this is not excusing how bad they have been, okay? But that is who has been under the microscope and obviously in the crosshairs, and I totally get why. But the reason they are having the road trip they're having is because of the names I mentioned prior to them. The guys that we look at and you guys know that will have to perform, and I still have confidence that they will, talking about India and Vinny and Michael Massey to a lesser extent, but really I'm talking about India and Salvador Perez and Vinny. Those three guys have to get better. Am I confident that those three will? Yes. I don't think Vinny's going to hit .185 or whatever he is all year, or whatever it is right now. Like, clearly not playing well. But that's the bigger problem, Cody. Those names, big time, way more than if your number 7, 8, 9 hitter is actually getting on base or not. And last night, actually, the bottom of the order was effective somehow.
Yeah, it was. And MJ squared one up. But unfortunately, when you are in a cold streak, even when you hit the ball well, because he struck out the previous three at-bats. Even when you hit a ball well, it doesn't necessarily find somebody. I don't know if anybody caught MLB Network. Vinny Pasquantino was on there. He was doing an interview before the game yesterday, the day before, whatever it was. And he was talking about his bat speed. He has one of the 5 highest increases in bat speed this year. Normally you'd say, oh, that's a good thing. Bat speed is good, right? You would think overall. This was his explanation, which I found fascinating, because this is how particular hitting is when it comes to, like, are you hitting well or are you not?
Largest increase in bat speed?
Yeah, I did know this.
Concerted effort in the offseason, change of workouts or anything? Swinging heavy bat?
I got stronger in the offseason. There wasn't any concerted effort to just increase the bat speed. I'm trying to figure out if this is a good thing for me or not. Because I've started to swing and miss a little bit more. I've started to chase a little bit more this year. And I'm wondering if I'm trying too hard. So there's a piece of it where it's like, am I over swinging? It's something we're walking through right now of where am I at my best. We've started to look at some bat speed models from the past few years of, okay, where's my honey hole? In a vacuum, swinging fast.
Great. Is that because you believe sometimes with the increased bat speed you might be in and out of the zone?
Yeah. Well, last night, for example, I hit a cutter right here, 108 that way.
Yeah. Right, that's not doing you anything.
I don't really want to do that.
Right.
So, I think there's a piece of it where some of it is, and it was a 2-0 count, so I'm ready to rip, I'm ready to go, and got the pitch that I thought I wanted and hit it foul. So it was one of those things where it's like, well, maybe there's a piece of it where there's too much effort on trying to be too quick, and with that, and it might not necessarily be the bat speed itself, but it's the effort of trying to, get out front and do some damage as opposed to letting it come to me.
That's what Vinny said. Very honest, though, talking about, you don't hear that very often.
He usually
from,
is. He's like,
he is. But in general, you don't hear athletes, let alone baseball players, be that on, like, the bat speed thing actually might be a problem for him.
He's getting out in front. He's chasing stuff more. He's up. Look, hitting is crazy because, like, one little hink, like, can throw the whole system off. He's like, I'm not even sure if it's a good thing for me right now because it might be throwing off the way that I've had success. So, like, I like you. Do not think Vinny's going to hit like this the entire year. I think it'd be kind of crazy to assume that.
But he's one of the guys that have to get going. We can talk till we're blue in the face about MJ Melendez and Hunter Renfro and should they be sent down or DFA'd or they're
but
not
Vinny
hitting.
And Bobby and India, or not Bobby, but if Vinny and India and
Salvi.
Massey and Salvi aren't going to hit, well, then we're not getting anywhere anyway. India, I saw people last night on Twitter being like, should they move him out of the leadoff spot? I'm
goodness.
Like, for who?
Yeah.
Are we watching the same? No one can hit right now. Unless you're here to tell me you want to go back to Mikel Garcia at the leadoff spot, which they did for a huge chunk last year and it didn't work. Look, sometimes the plan fails, and I'll admit that. Like, I don't know if that's going to be the case here. I am not saying that's the case right now. Sometimes it fails, but there is no scenario this year in which you trade away Brady Singer, trade for Jonathan India, and you move him off the leadoff spot and you're successful. The only way you're successful is if he works. He works there specifically. And so in the interim, is it a problem that he's not hitting very well? Sure, it is. But it's not just him. It's not just Vinny. It's not just Salvi.
What about?
It's the whole lineup. They only gave up 4 runs in 3 games in New York to the number one power hitting team in the league and got swept. So, like, the problem is just the offense, the aggregate. It's not, not
you,
that part.
You go into a game, and right now, once your pitching can be pretty darn good, and if not great at times, and an opponent gets to 4 runs, and the way they're playing right now, the game's over. That's the reaction from fans, understandably so. If I tell you tonight the Tigers get 4 runs in the first 6 innings, chances are they're losing. And not chances, they are losing. The numbers say they are losing.
Like Chris Bubich
right this second.
Okay, last night.
That's where they're at. Now, there's a bigger conversation to be had, too, about where, for those that want guys called up, right? John Rave's name comes up, among others. Hey, call this guy up. And, you know, in those are more the replacement level players for a Melendez or Renfro. Yeah. But that doesn't solve the bigger names. The question is right now, and a name that's going to get more and more in the crosshairs is not a player. It's going to be Alex Zumwalt, who has been praised over and over. He's done a great job. And most notably, he got praised for Bobby Wood Jr., who is just a superstar anyway. But I'm not saying he hasn't helped him. But like, you know.
Yeah, I think you get the credit for the successes and the failures. Right. Like, you know, I think sometimes people are like, he'd have been good no matter who it is.
For him, if this offense a month from now is still – 3 weeks from now, 2 weeks from now, is still across the board, with the exception of Bobby, basically, across the board struggling, and not just two guys at the bottom of the order. If the entire offense is struggling, then you absolutely have to look at your hitting development at the lower levels and at the big league level, and what adjustments are or not being made. If they are going to right now be, what is it, the 29th or 30th worst or 30th best?
The only team
worse
is the Rockies, the team that's coming to the K on Tuesday, baby.
So I think
you're ready for some 2-1 games.
The conversation will shift towards hitting coach and others if this offense is struggling still weeks and weeks from now.
Because of the
I know some people are saying like it's you can't wait. I totally understand. That's why I think it's a huge series this weekend. But they're not firing a hitting coach on April 17th.
Yeah.
And they're not, like, maybe they send down Melendez after this road trip. Maybe. But they're not DFAing Hunter Renfro this weekend. Like, those are just things that are not happening. And I get why they're not happening this early in the season.
One thing I've seen is just, like, everybody's ready to get everybody. I'm like, would you like them to send the entire Major League roster down to the minors? And if they could. You want them to send India and Vinny and Massey and Sav, just send them all down to the minors.
Look, people are frustrated.
And we'll just call
it.
And they should.
People are frustrated.
The team made the playoffs last year. But that's why this series is important. Everyone starts to feel more regulated. And I know like 10 and 12 on the records wouldn't be like, wow, look at them go. But everything starts to feel a little more regulated that the team who is currently in first place in the American League Central, while you're on their turf against a really good pitching staff, you just go 2-2. Look, you win 3 out of 4 and all of a sudden I'm riding high. I'm feeling great. Team's back to 500. You made a dent on the team who's sitting ahead of you in the standings. Cool. 2-2 is vital. You go 0-4 and it is full-blown panic. I mean, panic from Royals fans. 1-3 and you're feeling bad, but 0-4 and panic will set in for Royals fans.
Yeah, someone
and not no choice but to start making some kind of moves.
913-586-7965. That's the Jays Southland Tow Service text line as we're talking about the Royals getting swept against the Yankees, looking ahead and the struggles obviously with this offense right now. Someone says, they said 7 out of 9 hitters are 7 out of 9 are hitting below 200. Today you're saying it too. What's your solution? Well, one, I think we just told you the bigger
patience.
Problem. The bigger problem is the guys 1 through 4 than it is the guys 7 through 9. Honestly, at this point, the solution is not just going ahead and sending down 4 players. They could send down MJ Melendez today. The offense isn't suddenly just going to start hitting. So the solution, as I said, right now you don't
hope.
Like the answer.
Time.
You have to wait it out. Yeah. You have to say that the track record of who Vinny's been as a hitter, the track record of who Salvi has been as a hitter, the track record of who Jonathan India has been as a guy that gets on base, even though he's not a power guy, he still had 15 home runs last year. He hasn't hit one yet this year. Like that's what you're waiting on. And you can use the word hope if you want, and that doesn't make people happy. But I'm banking on the track record. I don't think that Vinny and these guys just suddenly lost their talent and skill and the Monstar stole it. That's what I am telling you. But admittedly, if weeks from now they are still not hitting as an entire offensive unit, which is the case right now, then yeah, guys like Alex Zumwalt and the hitting development and the hitting coach and all that has to be under the microscope more. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, eventually, I'm not saying they won't have those conversations, but I wouldn't like it, I'll say. I wouldn't like if my organization... I wouldn't like if my organization panicked after 18 games. That would concern me. I wouldn't like them. They're like, tear it all down. Zoom Walt's gone. Q
there
can get out of here.
There has to be a balance like, of this, though. Like, what
yeah,
people
like,
are,
I'm not saying that...
There has to be a balance of like what fans are saying, right? Of like, the world is ending... With also the, hey, nothing is wrong, right? Neither, both are extremes. You can't say nothing's wrong. You also can't say that the season is over. There's got to be a little bit of middle ground, and I know that doesn't always exist. But this series this weekend is going to change, at bare minimum, fan interest and buy-in by the time they come back into the K. Whatever happens this weekend is going to potentially tank that.
If they go 2-2, do you get to take a deep breath? Is that how that feels? 2-2 is like a deep breath. 3-4 is like you're feeling like... Yeah. You got a little pep in your step, Gold? Is that how it is? This is my chain of command. They win all four games. Whoo, I'm riding high. Everything's fixed. Yeah. Problems are solved. Rainbows and puppies and sunshine. We're great.
Yeah.
They win 3 out of 4. I got a nice pep in my step. Almost clicked my heels on the way inside my house. 2-2, take a deep breath. 1-3, I am starting to really worry. 0-4, I'm in full panic.
Right.
Like, that's why, like, when you say it's a big series, I have like the pain chart essentially at the doctor's office, but for like my own personal feelings, you know?
Right. No, I hear you. Someone said, hey, there's expectations for the team now that they made the playoffs. Oh, the bar is set very high. You can have high expectations and understand that right now, the way they're playing, there's no way they're going to meet that without saying they got to tear it all down. That's all. Yeah. The expectation, we are holding them to the standard of making the playoffs. I told you, I'm holding them to the standard of winning this division this year. But to act like on April 17th that I should already say that the standard is clearly 1,000% not going to be met and they got to tear it all down and they should trade this guy and DFA this guy. That's what I mean by the balance. We can acknowledge they're not meeting their expectation.
Oh, yeah.
We're all on the same page without also acting like they need a DFA three guys and they need to go and fire this hitting coach. That's all I'm saying. So ultimately, I actually think we agree with more than we think, like a lot of things in life, than we realize, even though we're all kind of talking around each other. But let's get to the trash of the day. All right. I love this one. I love this trash of the day because we haven't had a good heist story.
Oh, I do enjoy a good heist.
The last heist story we brought up was, and there still has not been, I don't believe the conclusion, was that story out in L.A. over Easter last year, I think it was, Easter week. So we're almost coming up right on a year where there was the Brinks facility or one of those companies, and someone, they got a machine somehow and
they
completely...
ever catch that person?
No. And it was, remember, it was like...
Good for them.
Are they long gone now?
Oh, I mean,
it's been a year.
They've been getting away with it for a year.
So that was the last real heist story we had. But we got an update. This goes
other than
out to L.A.
You know,
yeah. That wasn't a heist, really, right?
No.
All right. Los Angeles also. It's another one in L.A. According to the Associated Press, burglars tunneled through a concrete wall to gain access. And there's video of this. It's incredible. Access to an L.A. jewelry store, making off with at least $10 million worth of watches, pendants, gold chains, and other merchandise. The heist happened around 9:30 Sunday night at a place called Love Jewels on Broadway, the heart of downtown jewelry district there. Investigators were reviewing security camera footage that shows the suspects entered the store from a large hole they drilled from the property next door. I mean, this is Italian Job. This is all that. All
you see this in
one.
Every heist movie. They're always like drilling underneath to gain access.
They tunneled through multiple levels of concrete into the target location. An unknown number of suspects fled through the same hole and drove off in a late model Chevy truck. The heist was not discovered until store employees, of course, arrived to work Monday morning. Initial estimates, again, $10 million, although the owner told the AP the loss was around $20 million. They did not have insurance. No alarms went off, and the fee to their in-store security cameras were cut.
Wait. I feel like you kind of have... Don't you have to have insurance? You got $20 million worth of stuff laying around?
Well,
I got to have it on,
have
like,
some insurance,
I had it on my $3,000 car. What, you can't, like, before? You don't want it on 20 mil?
Yeah.
Dang.
The video and the footage is incredible. The photos are incredible. It is straight out of a movie. It really is. Like, these people clearly saw a movie way back when and said, all right, let's do some research. Can we do this? This was a pro job.
I mean, yeah, I would think that you did a little research on the, like, you always have to assume that it's something gold, like the guy worked at the alarm company who installed it because he knew it wouldn't trigger.
Well, don't look into all that.
If you went through the wall or, you know what I'm saying? I feel like you got to have some, like, alarm schematic or, like, former employees, obviously. So I think you had to have some knowledge that the alarm system wouldn't trigger by digging through the night. I mean, I guess, what did you say the lot was next to it? How do they find, like, the business next to it in order to gain access?
I don't know what type of business it was. Yeah.
Was it empty? I mean, how do they gain access to the basement?
It just said a building next door. Could be vacant. Who knows?
Damn, okay.
But they tunneled through the concrete. This is almost a year to the date of the story we mentioned was from Garda World in L.A., which fell on Easter holiday, where they got upwards of $20 million, one of the largest thefts ever in the United States. And that was a story that still has no conclusion. They're still investigating.
Somebody claims if you've paid for it and have no loans on the merchandise, you can just self-insure or have no insurance.
I mean, I guess the store could have fully, I mean, if you've already paid for it, you're still losing $20 million.
I mean, I just don't
think
I'd want to risk it. Like, what's the chance somebody walks out with $100,000? You know, like, I want protection. And, of course, I don't know what those insurance things cost. My wife does work for an insurance, like, researcher who does stuff for insurance companies. Maybe I should, you know.
This one feels like it's more likely they get caught than the other one. The other one was money. This one is jewelry.
It's harder to fence the jewelry. They've got, like, codes and stuff in some of them, you know?
And a money serial. I understand, like, Garda World probably had all the dollar bills. So I understand there's tracking methods for both. But my guess is these people are more likely to get caught than the people, one, because it's already been a year, duh. Like, these people, the window, they got, like, a two-week window where you feel like you have a good chance to catch these people. After that, good luck. Like, the people from a year ago, that $20 million heist, as Drew said, they are long gone.
I mean, do you try to fence overseas?
As they're never going to get caught, essentially, as long as they don't mess up. They're basically, unless they introduce themselves back to society.
I mean, you better have a fence in, like, already in motion if you're going to go through this amount of trouble to steal it.
It's going to take
a while to get rid of it already.
Take a while to funnel, the $20 million through a bunch of laundromats in L.A., you know? Mm. It's going to take a bit.
Well, like, one diamond ring, you can't, like, it doesn't work. With cash, at least, I can run it through the washing machine and try to take the thing to the damn casino. I can't do anything. Like, Jules, I have to have a fence. Yeah. You got to have, like, an actual, you got to have somebody who's willing to take in all that
those
jewelry.
People exist. Those people exist.
Or you got to know a lot of shady pawn brokers.
I mean, this is also in L.A. It's more feasible to find that quickly in L.A. than it is if you were in Kansas City or something.
Yeah, I'd be trying to get myself on, like, a cargo ship. I'm trying to fence that stuff overseas, you know?
Yeah, maybe.
I'm not
trying
to do that on the home turf. Feels like it's a little too easy to catch.
Just go full movie and have a private jet waiting for them at the airport. Sunday night, they broke in. By 1 a.m., there's a flight to fly them to another country and get the hell out of town.
The thing they never cover on that is when you fly back into another country, you still go through customs. Right. They're going to go through your stuff.
But not if you're paying off somebody at that.
You got to pay off a customs official.
Not if you're paying somebody off in that random country.
That's true. Fair enough.
At least that's what the movies tell me. I don't know.
Never actually tried to pull off a massive
heist. Turns out I haven't. All right, that's the trash of the day. Up next, let's react a little bit more to what Chiefs General Manager Brett Veach had to say about this upcoming draft. We are just a week out, which means we are counting down to some of our final mock drafts as well. That's next here on Cody and Gold.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Allo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome in to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Every day at 11:30 with Cody and Gold on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan.
It is the Chiefs Red Half Hour. We're going to talk plenty of Chiefs draft with Nate Taylor as well in the 1 o'clock hour today. One of our Chiefs insiders from The Athletic going to join us. You guys can watch the show on video as well. Facebook, Twitch, YouTube, Twitter, X. You can subscribe. Make sure you don't miss any of the shows here on 96.5 The Fan. So Brett Veach, if you missed it, he started our show today. He had his media availability. He spoke for, 40 minutes before the draft, which is a week from tonight, and we will see you all at the landing in Liberty. Bank and Chris Sudocero broadcasting live starting at 6. Your chance to win $965 plus a autographed helmet from Juwan Taylor. Hope to see all of you there 1 week from tonight. There's a lot of things that stood out. We talked about the running back comments from Brett Veach, but I want to focus on a few other things. One adjacent to the draft, but the draft is maybe causing a little bit of a hurdle, and that is, where are things at with Trey Smith and their desire to get a long-term deal done?
Hopefully we get that done. I mean, there's no lack of interest or will or desire on our end. And we did have Pete, a ton of talk with Tori and Jimmy, his agents at the combine. Those conversations continued on to the owners' meetings. And so now also CAA has a ton of draft prospects and they have a ton going on. So, we've exchanged multiple phone calls, multiple emails, and my guess is once the draft's over and our focus is back on taking care of the players that are here and trying to get those guys locked up, and CAA on their end, I mean, they have, again, they're one of the leading agencies in regards to the players they produce every year. So I'm sure once things settles down on both ends, we'll be in a position to continue this dialogue and hopefully make some progress there, but there's no secret there. We'd like to get Trey locked up.
So it sounded like once the week or so after the franchise tag was done, they were not getting this deal done before the draft. Essentially, the agency is too busy, is kind of what I heard, right? They're too busy. Yeah. The Chiefs are busy with the draft. Let's get this draft out of the way and let's talk again in May, basically. And we have till July. That's where things are at on the Trey Smith route. We've had a lot of people asking about that. Like, how much longer? Well, it's not happened for another 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks at least.
Yeah. And I think if you listen to him earlier or later, I don't remember when it took place in the press conference, and that's all up at 96.5thefan.com. But if you listen, he talked about one. Do you know what area he said was not good? Interior offensive line. And he said it was painful to let go of Joe Tooney. That tells you a little bit where they are on the offensive line. Their plan is Trey Smith and one of the other guys in-house. They don't see a bunch of great guard Kingsley options outside of there. And once again, mentioned Kingsley. And so I view this as, I would have liked it done before the draft, but they also don't, like, it didn't stop them from buying what they wanted to buy, Gold. They, I think, better than they have in years, maybe it's just the way the free agency laid out, position themselves to not have a desperate need. There is no desperate need. I'm not saying they don't need defensive line help, defensive end help, offensive line help, whatever. But there is no position that they could not. They might be the most fully established 53-man roster today in the NFL, or one of the five closest to that today. And so they have a little bit of momentum there, which means, yeah, you can wait on Trey Smith. I still think you need to get the job done in order to make all of this make sense. Make it worthy of trading Tooney. Make all of this worthy. You have to get Trey Smith signed. You and I both agree. You go through the whole year again. What the hell's the cost going to be next year? I don't want to find out. And can you keep him? Or will he just be a free agent, Gold?
Yeah, and then, the position, like you were saying, just because they can technically take best player available does not mean that we're saying that they have their long-term answer at left tackle. Because I know there's people probably thinking that, well, we just watched the offensive line struggle. What do you mean they don't have an obvious need for... Jalen Moore is going to be the left tackle in 2025. The question is he beyond that? And that's why there still is a chance they take a tackle in the first round. One of the other things that Brett Veach was asked about, though, is what are the chances they trade back? You know, that's always something that fans and we all say, like, oh, just trade back, stockpile picks. Easier said than done.
You know, I certainly have a tendency to be on the aggressive side and move up. Although it's interesting, as I just mentioned to Pete before, the numbers are a little bit down in regards to that top end, usually being 15 to 17. They're more from in that 12 to 14 range. So, you know, and then as I mentioned, definitely the secondary stack is a little bit bigger. So I think that there is probably, just from a sure number standpoint, more of a likelihood that could happen when you have, again, on the front end, the numbers, meaning 7.5 or higher on our grading system being low, but then that next 7.0 to 6.5 grading system and the numbers being higher, I think that from that standpoint, I think that could be in our wheelhouse and it might make sense to us. So we'll have to see. I think there's always, or at least it worked out that way in the last few years, been one guy. Worthy was one of those guys last year, but we'll see. But you know, I know that I've shown to be more aggressive, but I'm certainly open to it. And if it makes sense for us and we can acquire additional picks, that, you know, I'd be all for it.
I do understand this notion of, like, he tends to be more aggressive because, like, think about it. You spend 4 months locked into a room watching college athletes play football. You interview him, you talk to coaches, and then he's four picks away from where you're going to pick. Do you really want to risk it? And you're like, nah, man, I just kind of want him now. Like, especially right in the first round, if he only has 12 or 13 first-round grades on somebody and you're sitting there at 26 and one of the guys you personally have a first-round grade on is there and it's 26, why wouldn't you trade with the Rams, right? I do kind of understand the logic. He has just not been a trade-down guy, and this is a good trade-down draft.
But, if one of those guys slides from your board, but also if there's only 12 or 13 that you have a grade for, obviously it makes sense that there's a good chance that they're not available then at 31, and so you're looking to trade back. And if you're saying that there's more kind of what I'll call second-tier guys, there's way more depth in that market, if you will, of the draft and the draft class. Like, there's just more of those guys that are just out of the first round than maybe in years past. Does that mean another team is willing to trade up? Are you willing to trade back? I think sometimes we get so into the, it sounds so simple. It's, why didn't they trade back? They should have traded back. Somebody has to want to trade in. And he also further, we didn't have the full cut, but he also mentioned, you know, that everybody always talks about somebody wanting to trade back in the first round to get a quarterback for the fifth year option. He's like, yeah, dude, that's never happened.
That was really funny.
He's like, that's never happened. Like, now it could, every but year, it's never happened.
And it's especially easy. The Chiefs probably have to hear this every year because they're always picking at 31 or 32. Based on the last five of the last 6 years, they've either picked 31 or 32. So, like, they're always at the tail end of the draft, depending on where they are. So every year he's got to sit there here and say, like, come on, man. But, you know, Jackson Dart, Jalen Milrow, they might want that guy. What's funny about the fifth-year option at quarterback, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing to have, because it's not. If you love a quarterback and you take him in the second round and it's gangbusters, you will not care. You will pay them long before the fifth-year option. You will not care that you do not have the fifth-year option attached to them, you know? That only applies to the mediocre quarterbacks you take in which you're hedging your bet and you're not sure. It only exists in the world that you, like, take a first-round pick on Tua and you'd like to buy yourselves a little bit more time to be sure. If you love the dude, you won't care about the fifth-round pick. So it matters, but in a weird way, I actually think I can make, and this, I'm going to sound crazy for this, I actually think you can make an argument that the fifth-round option is actually more important at almost any other position not named quarterback. Because there's a lot of other positions you'd like to buy a fifth year on, have it, extend the time, franchise tag him, and get 6 years out of it. If you got a quarterback you love, you're not talking about 6 years. You're talking about 15. The fifth year option doesn't, it matters more for a defensive end than it matters for quarterback in my mind. Because I might try to be buying 6 years out of Karlaftis. I get the four in the contract, the fifth year option, I can franchise him. I get it for 6 years before I gotta pay him.
To see if Felix is gonna work out, you know, any of those.
Yeah, a quarterback, if it's working out, you're paying him anyway. Who cares? You know, like, who cares?
One of the other things that Brett Veach addressed was just overall depth at positions. We already discussed running back was a position that clearly they think is incredibly deep, and basically said, we're taking one. But he also discussed the depth at some other positions.
I think the defensive end is, the defensive line class in general is good. I think that's probably driven more so by the depth at D end. I think there's a lot of D ends, and I think that You know, running backs is certainly, I think, the deepest class in the draft. A close second would be D end. I think the interior defensive line numbers are I think, better than most years, but I don't think they come anywhere close to the D-line depth and the corner depth. I think those two are just wow. I mean, you look at the board and those names go from top to bottom. Interior O-line is light. Corner, I think, is actually decent in the middle rounds. I think D-line is okay, but I don't think it's any more or less than any one particular. I think that where you're getting the big numbers from top to bottom are D-end and running back. And then everywhere else, it's a little bit scattered. Corners, I think, a little meatier in the middle. And then receivers, every year you're going to have numbers. It's just the vision and the plan, how you're going to utilize those guys within your offense. So you're always going to have numbers. I think certainly on – like last year was an extraordinary class, and there's so many receivers taken high. I don't think you're going to see that this year. But you'll see receivers taken in every round just because they're always plentiful in regards to numbers. So I think that – when you talk about the D line, I think that that's really getting fueled by the defensive end depth.
Edge guys is why defensive line is getting discussed. Basically what we were saying with the interior, if you want them to take a guy to play opposite Chris Jones, probably gonna have to come early in the draft because it's just not as deep.
Yeah.
Edge rushers, you could draft in the third or fourth round and still feel like you're getting somebody.
Honestly, with Chris Jones, if you had to get a better defensive tackle a different year, you might have a year or two to buy yourself time on that. Defensive end is a bigger need. Karlaftis is not under contract. Not that I'm saying he can't get a long-term deal in Kansas City. He certainly can. Veach mentioned that too, and those conversations will take place more in the summer with him and Trent McDuffie. Charles Minnehue, one-year deal. You got like a year left on Dana. Felix hasn't worked out to this point. Like, you got no long-term answers at defensive end. So this draft's going to line up pretty good. Not bad timing overall, you know? I'll take it. I mean,
mock draft, another one.
Listen to that timing.
1 week from tonight.
The
mock drafts will not matter 1 week from tonight. They won't matter anymore.
Thank goodness.
They'll be done.
It'll be over.
Until the early 2026 draft mock drafts.
We'll give you all an update on where we're at for road trip numbers coming up in about 15 minutes for those who might still want to go to Springfield with us. But next week, we'll be at the Landing in Liberty for the draft.
All right, so we're going to go to Bleacher Report for the first time. Brent Sobleski is the person who came up with this mock. This is a third-round prediction based on the latest Bleacher Report scouting department ranking. So this is a fully updated one based on what Bleacher Report does.
They have their own scouting department?
We have a Cody and Gold scouting department, too.
Yeah, just Gold. Jay Binkley after with a can of dip and a 30 rack. But it's working, man. It's working.
At 31, this is a name that we brought up before. I think this is very early on a second-round pick, but this guy potentially with the need of defensive tackle in particular, the lack of depth there. Maybe the Chiefs decided to take this guy, Tyleek Williams, defensive tackle out of Ohio State. And again, it's an Ohio State guy.
Somebody else, Ohio State guys.
But Brent mentions the organization appears to have some faith in Jalen Moore after signing that deal. So they transition to defensive line. Mm-hmm. And one of the guys that's left essentially out of the D tackle grouping that's taken is Tyleek Williams. I do wonder,
is that a little high for him?
It might be, but I wonder if there's a string of defensive tackles potentially that goes where, kind of like what Brett Veach was saying, they know the edge rusher is deeper. They can maybe wait a little bit. They're going to take interior defensive line if they need one. And as a result, Harmon's gone. Kenneth Grant's gone. Walter Nolan's gone.
And
the Chiefs are like, look,
although
we need to.
Although pick 32, you're going to be sad about Gold.
I'm just saying, I know Tyleek Williams. I know Tyleek Williams. You know Tyleek Williams the last time we talked about him on this show?
Mm-hmm.
Tyleek Williams is Mr. Quote, girthy lower body with big meaty hands. That is Tyleek Williams. That's when we said that on this show. That's his draft profile. Explosive and violent, punch and release, but girthy lower body with big meaty hands.
Because of the lack of Turk Wharton, they need another defensive tackle.
Does that mean it's more of a important thing for this year, Cody, than Edge? Because I know you said Edge is
for
the biggest
this thing. Year. Because they got Charles Minnehue for this year.
So I wonder if because the edge depth is so deep, you can rely on a second round pick or one of the early thirds maybe, and you get an edge rusher that after this year is ready to go when Charles Minnehue leaves, or you decide what to do with Karlaftis. Where now he does mention, Sobleski does mention Turk Wharton leaving. Immediate Turk Wharton replacement can be the long-term guy over the course of time for when Chris Jones is gone. So yeah. That again, that was a pick at 31.
Okay, so but at 32, your guy Jane Pierce Jr. went.
Dang it! So he was on the board.
He was on the board,
okay, and they chose the guy with the big meaty hands instead. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So your guy was available. Mine was not. I'm starting to think Derek Harmon was always a pipe dream, and I shouldn't have put him on my crush list at all because he might not even be.
I mean, you could still like a guy that's going to go in the 20s. You know,
when we talk about draft crushes, I want them to be realistic because otherwise, Gold can come on here and he can be like, my running back draft crush is Ashton Jeanty.
That's right.
We're not getting anywhere. Mm. We're not serving the audience. Serving the audience by having that conversation. You know,
second round pick 63, name that we've heard before, Arianti Ursary, offensive tackle from Minnesota, a guy that had been mocked in the first round but now falling at 63. I think you would take it.
The exact Kingsley situation. People have mentioned him at 30. Have mentioned him at 31. He slides down to 63, and then you just. Regard, by the way, Chiefs fans will hate that pick
probably
because they will be convinced it is a carbon copy to exactly what they did last year. Guy who got talked about as a fringe first rounder falls all the way down to almost a third rounder, according to the way some people discuss it, and then you know, like you're just praying again. Now in this case, he doesn't have to start. And so the expectations are a little bit different, although, you know, same thing.
This is a local kid, too. KC Moe. Ursary. So
some of the other picks around as well, Harold Fannin Jr. goes right after to the Eagles, just before Dylan Sampson to the Commanders. Kyle Williams, loves at 60.
So on Ursary, according to Lance Erline, quote, strong, sticky hands.
What the hell's a sticky?
Rushers from escaping once he's in the web.
Let me tell you something.
He's calling him Spider-Man?
Weakness, tight hips. Tight hips.
A lot of tight hips.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of tight hips.
Going to the third round, pick 66, Damian Martinez out of Miami. Ooh,
that's my third guy. That's my third running back on my board.
Old as hell for a guy coming out of college.
I told you, at running back, I care a lot less because I'm just getting 4 years out of you, and then you can just, like, go
old
retire.
By NFL standards. He'll be
24.
No, he's younger. He's younger than we think. He's not the guy that was 25.
If you do,
He'll be 21 at the start of the season.
Oh, he's not bad.
Yeah. If you do, if you look at the running back run, though, Martinez might be one of the best guys left, other than Bashal Tuten goes a little bit later in the third round. But Henderson is gone. Judkins is gone. Hampton, actually, they have going at 35. I don't know if you guys saw that. So the Chiefs have passed on Hampton.
Okay.
At this draft, but Caleb Johnson is gone, and so is Dylan Sampson.
We got confused on Damian Martinez. I think yesterday when Bink came in studio, he was saying that we were calling him old, and then now I thought we did call him old. No, he's not. He's actually
must have been someone else we were calling.
Maybe it was Caleb Johnson.
His comp is Donta Foreman.
We have been accused of ageism on this show before, so it's not out of the question.
I mean, we looked at so many different running backs here over the course of time.
All right, who they got at 95?
At 95, this is a new name.
All right.
Okay.
Fans are going to like this because they've texted in this player multiple times. Out of Kansas, Kobe Bryant.
Okay, so they're taking a kid out of the Kansas City area and a university. Are they not allowed to scout outside of 30 miles?
He's a good player.
In fairness, Kobe Bryant is...
I'm not anti-taking local players, but I think when we do these like mock drafts, they end up so local heavy. You're like, that's not how teams draft for the most part.
No, but this
they
is
just
later
take people
in the draft.
Inside of 30 miles.
But he's also projected to be where this mock draft is.
He's like
this wouldn't be crazy. No, he obviously played at Kansas, first team All Big 12 for three straight years. He would be somebody that in the middle round, I think, whether it's a KU player, a K-State player, an MU player, if that's where they're projected, then so be it. Well, people brought up Devin Neal, obviously a running back, and Giddens at K-State. But here's the quote, has plenty of dog in him as a run defender and tackler.
I like that.
You like that?
Well, and based on what Brett Veach said, too, about corner, like he sounds really high on the corners. It sounds, by what Brett Veach said,
decently high.
If they took a corner in the first three, four picks that they have, it wouldn't be a surprise at all. I think he really likes
6 foot 180. Some people say he's got to get a little bit bulkier, but
what's the over under? You know, I see all these mock drafts, and I'm officially feeling like I want to go lower than the. What's the over under right now in Shedeur Sanders' draft pick?
8.5 or 9.
I feel
and
like
half,
my best time to bat.
I'm going
like he's getting picked higher than that. So, like, I'm officially, I think, this is about the right time to bet it before, like, all the rumors start to circle. I think he ends up going between 3 and 6. Like, I think the Raiders are a good trade candidate based on SpyTech's history or what the Bucks have done before. Like,
that's
I think he could go at 3. Like, I don't, you know, I'm
Sabusky
starting to think.
Has the Saints trading up from 9 with the Raiders to get Shedeur at 6.
You can still get Sanders if you think stuff about the Giants is not true in terms of that they're happy with what they have and all that. You can get Sanders to go to the Giants at 3 still at like 5-1 odds. Mm. I don't think it's terrible to sprinkle some of that. I still think the Saints are the team that he goes to. I'm not buying the Steelers stuff. I'm just not buying it. I think even Bink in his mock draft, he had the Steelers taking Jackson Dart yesterday instead of Sanders, because Sanders would have already been off the board.
Brent Sobleski has them taking, this is, I don't like this because it's the AFC North, but they have them taking Harmon, which of course they do, because the AFC North makes good picks other than the Browns.
Mm-hmm.
Him and Cam Hayward next to each other, good heavens. Be a problem. In terms of the other teams in the division, by the way, so Sobleski again has the Raiders trading back, getting pick 9 in the trade, and 71 actually, so it looks like, I mean, that actually might not be a bad trade for the Raiders, but he has them taking Will Johnson, corner from Michigan.
It's a good pick for them.
Who I think is the best corner in the draft.
Some people think they might take him at 6, so that's not a bad pick.
He's really good. The Broncos at 20, Sobleski has him taking Shamar Stewart from Texas A&M, a guy that we've seen mocked to the Chiefs before. Chargers, Walter Nolan at 22.
We're taking some of our guys, man.
They do have
They have a lot of similar needs. Like some of the divisional teams have a lot of similar needs.
So Sobleski has them taking Travis Hunter at 2. Then he has him trading back into the first round at 24 with the Vikings to take Jackson Dart. So you get Dart, you get Travis Hunter.
Wow, that's a hell of a draft.
That would be I don't know how big of a risk you would call it. I would say it's a substantial risk from the Browns.
I think they have to take a substantial risk. They're in such a bad spot. They look like the worst franchise in football. They should be taking chances. What are you going to do? Worst franchise in football to the worst franchise in football? Take a chance. Play Travis Hunter two ways. And sign Jackson Dart and make him the day one
starter.
Especially
how good the defense has been over the last 4 or 5 years. And of course, again, Kevin Stefanski is considered one of the best coaches in the league, even though they haven't shown that team-wise because the team hasn't given him the resources.
It's weird. Normally, like, hey, if you draft a quarterback in the first round, start on week one. But last year, Michael Penix drafted in the first round, did not start week one. What's his name?
J.J. McCarthy.
Even though he got hurt, he was not going to start week one. Mm-hmm. I know everybody thinks it's because he got hurt, but no, he was never going to start week one. Sam Darnold was always starting week one.
Did not start?
Drake May did not start. So even if the Steelers took Jackson Dart, Mason Rudolph, or the Giants, I'm sorry, in this hypothetical, Russell Wilson still starting week one probably from the New York Giants.
And even if it's the Steelers.
If
it's the Steelers, maybe they still run out Mason Rudolph in the first week or two, and then they just get Jackson Dart acclimated, whereby week 4 or 5, they see where things are at, and then
That's true.
They go to him.
That's another mock draft. Taking a look at it 1 week from tonight. We'll see you guys at the landing in Liberty. Up next, we'll get to what's trending and talk some more Royals baseball. They have some roster decisions to make. And no, I'm not just talking about what you want them to do in terms of sending somebody down. Like, actually, numbers-wise, they will have a decision or two to make. What should they do? We'll go over that next right here on Cody and Gold.